Blog Talk Radio.
3, 2, 1. It takes a unique breed of person to put a serial killer out of business. Alan Cumming plays that person in Instinct, coming to CBS Sunday night. Executive producer Michael Rauch joins me next in an internet radio exclusive. Some critics name Mary Kills People the sleeper new series of 2017, while others put on their best show or best new show end of year wrap-ups. For everyone, Lifetime's Angel of Death Tale begins Season 2 Monday. Learn how that season will be later this hour from creator executive producer Tara Armstrong, live from Toronto. Also ahead, can librarians make a move? And our latest classic trivia winner. Hello, everyone. I'm Simon Applebaum, live from New York on Blog Talk Radio and presented on the iHeartRadio Podcast Network. This just in, tomorrow will be televised. Brought to you by Audible.com, proud development part of the New York Television Festival, and the leading provider of spoken audio entertainment and information that will transform the way you hear the world. Listen to audiobooks whenever and wherever you want. Get a free book when you sign up for a 30-day trial at audibletrial.com/televised. More details later in the program. Happy Friday afternoon to you and all, and welcome once again to the program All About Television. 40 degrees at the top of this hour. Great hour in store for you with wonderful guests, and we invite you to be part of the program. So easy to do, all you got to do, pick up the phone, pick up your voice, and use this number, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. That number's good anywhere, you're catching us across the country, around the world, here on Blog Talk Radio. Another way to get involved is our chat room. It's open for business right now and ready for you. It's SimonApple04, and it's at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. And while the phone is on the air, you can connect others by using Facebook Timeline. Click on the Facebook icon on your Blog Talk screen. Follow the instructions. Other people can be live with you. Might everyone have a tremendous day live with us in the Big Apple after these news notes. The new talk shows from Netflix keep on coming. The latest person to take the talk plunge there, Norm Macdonald. The former sitcom and Saturday Night Live Weekend Update star will get Norm Macdonald Has a Show on Netflix's lineup later this year, featuring a celebrity guest each episode and sidekick Adam Egan. Macdonald's show will get a 10-episode opening run. The Zoo Quest underway at The Librarians, Land Somewhere Else on television. TNT canceled the popular adventure series after 4 seasons yesterday. Now executive producer Dean Devlin has started discussions with several parties about keeping librarians alive into Season 5. 2 sports-oriented quickies before our first guest. Michael Smith will follow Jemele Hill in departing SportsCenter 6 p.m. edition tonight. Like Hill, Smith is expected to take a new ESPN assignment. And NBC Sports Network kicks off live coverage of the Winter Paralympic Games from South Korea this morning. And that is news notes for now. Now joining me live from New York in Airman Exclusive, the executive producer of CBS New Drama Instinct, coming Sunday night at the 60 Minutes, Michael Rauch. Michael, thanks for being here.
Thank you so much for having me.
You get a sense that Sunday night is opening night for you and Alan Cummings, the star, and everybody else involved.
Yes, we're actually premiering now Sunday, March 18th at 8 p.m. following 60 Minutes. So it's not this Sunday, the 11th. It's a week from Sunday.
So you got one more week before the opening night. Okay, great. We got the update on that. How's everybody anticipating how this show is going to do?
You know, we are all really excited and obviously nervous, and we're really happy with how the show turned out. And this is the point with the TV series where it's completely out of your hands, which is both liberating and terrifying because, you know, hopefully CBS has done an incredible job of marketing the show. And there's just so much TV out there right now that you obviously hope that an audience finds the show and likes the show enough to tell their friends and keep watching it.
Mm-hmm. Well, when the audience finds this show next Sunday night, what are they going to find? What kind of show is it? How is it different from a lot of other procedurals or a lot of other shows with quirky characters that are currently on the air?
I think there, you know, I'll take that in a few different parts. One is it's definitely a CBS procedural. However, tonally, it's a light show. So, you know, we're trying to walk that line of having dead bodies and at the same time be able to have the characters have fun and hopefully have the audience have fun too. So it's a tricky tone, but it's one that we're totally committed to. Another thing is that, you know, while again it's a CBS procedural, it's also a procedural that balances a little bit more towards character and relationship. So there'll always be the meat and potatoes of hopefully a great twisty-turny crime story. But we're also giving a lot of the story real estate to the characters and the relationships And the third part, which is what really sets it apart, is that this is actually the first hour-long broadcast network drama that's ever had a gay lead. So Alan Cumming plays Dr. Dylan Reinhardt, who is a gay man married to another man, and that's something that's never been done before. So that alone makes it different. And then, you know, oftentimes these shows kind of have a will they or won't they with the two leads. The other lead is played by Bojana Novakovic, and she's incredible, but we're not playing that tension between them since, you know, Dylan is not attracted to women and is married to a man.
Mm-hmm. Given that is this is a groundbreaking show for the gay and lesbian community, how much latitude is CBS giving toward how this character played by Cumming is developed?
You know, they have been incredible. And I can say that from the beginning, from the first pitch until now, where we'll be finishing post-production on the last episode next week, there hasn't been a note from them about, you know, the exploration of Dylan and the groundbreakingness of being a gay lead on a broadcast drama. And again, I want to, you know, it is a very big thing and a very important thing, but it's not what the show is about. The show isn't about him being gay. He just happens to be gay, and we're dealing with it in that way. We're not, you know, we're not shining a big spotlight on it. It's a situation where instead of the hero being married to someone from the other, an opposite gender, you know, he happens to be married to another man. So it's both groundbreaking, but this isn't a show about a gay lead. It's a show about an incredibly brilliant and quirky former CIA operative, became a professor, that was part of his cover, and now he's working at the NYPD Homicide Division, which is where he meets Detective Lizzie Needham. And it's really about these two working together to solve the crimes in New York.
Mm-hmm. How give us the road to making this show on CBS. How long has the program development been in development for, and how did you get involved along the way?
This was actually one of those really quick, thank goodness, processes. It's based on a book written by James Patterson and Howard Ruffin, and that book was called Murder Games. And the book was brought to me both by an executive who works for Patterson named Bill Robinson, as well as a production company run by Alex Kurtzman with Heather Caden and Aaron Byers called Secret Hideout. And they had the rights to the book. And at the time, Alan was very interested in playing Dylan, and I read the book and really enjoyed it and was very interested in doing something both on CBS but also something that hadn't been done before. And so, you know, when I got to the point of Dylan being gay, it really grabbed me as, okay, here's an opportunity to try to find something new since it's very hard to find something new these days. We pitched it. I met with Alan and kind of talked about my take on the show and the character and what I wanted to do with it. And he and I were very much on the same page, and he's an incredible guy and obviously very, very talented. I worked on the pitch, and we all went in together to, at the time that the president of the network was, Glenn Geller, and, Glenn basically bought it in the room, and he was great. And the studio, CBS Studios, was very supportive of it as well. And that was probably a year ago this past August. So in terms of the network calendar, you pitch up until around August, September, pilots are ordered in January, and then by May you find out if your show is on the air or not. So we found out in the middle of May, and we started shooting in the beginning of July, and we wrapped our season one, 13 episodes, in the middle of December. So it all happens very fast.
Michael Rauch is the executive producer of Instinct, is CBS's brand new drama produced here in New York, starring Alan Cummings. Of course, some people know on Broadway for his fantastic legendary performance as the MC in Cabaret, as well as being, of course, in that wonderful classic show, The Good Wife. That is now The Good Fight on CBS All Access. Michael joins us live here in New York this half hour on Tomorrow We Televised Instinct, which originally was announced by CBS to be premiering this coming Sunday night. We understand now it's going to be next Sunday night. That's going to be Sunday night, March 18th, and that'll be running after 60 Minutes and before NCIS Los Angeles. If you have a question or comment for Michael, give us a call, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, Simon Apple 04 by name. Coming up on Monday is a brand new book, that is out about how women are revolutionizing television. It's called Stealing the Show, and we've got the author of it as our lead guest. She's Joy Press, former TV critic for The Village Voice and feature writer for Los Angeles Times. It's a bestseller available at Barnes & Noble, Amazon, all over the place. In addition to her being on, we're going to offer it as our classic trivia question prize for next week. Joy Press from Stealing the Show, our lead guest Monday, 3:30 Eastern New Pacific here on Tomorrow We Televise. James Madison, one of the best-selling authors around, has been part of the CBS family for quite a while. Zoo, which is one of his original handiworks, with a 3-season summer run. What's it been like working with him?
He's been incredible in two ways. One is, you know, obviously, as you said, I think every 17th book bought either in the United States or in the world is written by James Patterson, which is, you know, if you stop and think about it, it's a little hard to fathom. So he is just a legend and also incredibly talented and prolific. So it was a little intimidating. I'd adapted a book before, and, you know, you want to be true to the book, and at the same time, books aren't written to be TV series, so you need to change things to give it legs, and you also want to start making decisions to take, as a writer, a sense of ownership over it. And he was just so helpful to me in terms of saying, you know, with the pilot episode, take what you love from the book, and if there's anything you don't love, don't worry about it. And so the second he said that, the pressure of having to, you know, try to please James Patterson and what he wrote really, really lessened. And then throughout the process, he read every document. And we do in TV, you do a lot of documents, you do story areas and outlines and scripts. And then, you know, there are episodes to watch before they're finished. And he read every story area and every outline and every script and watched every episode and gave notes. So he was very supportive and really helpful. He's obviously a guy who knows these types of stories. So having his input was very important.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned earlier that one of the keys to Instinct is the relationship between Cummings' character and also the NYPD detective. We'll get to who plays that person in a moment, a fairly new face in television. But give me a sense of what the relationship is. The sense I got from watching Cummings' character, the first word that came to mind was unorthodox. So is this a matter of unorthodox CIA operative on the comeback trail, if you will, forced or unforced, and then the detective that he's dealing with at the NYPD is orthodox, or is it there much more than that?
I think that's a great way to look at it and a great place to start. I mean, obviously, when you're putting together two characters in a film or in a book or in a TV series, you want and you need tension and conflict between them. So if they're the exact same people with the exact same ideas of how to do things and the exact same methodologies, it's going to get a little repetitive and boring. So you want to find people who will find conflict in terms of how they approach the world. And Alan's character, Dylan, is absolutely unorthodox. He's someone who comes from a world, both he's a musical savant and also, you know, gay, and was raised by a dad who is very high up in the CIA. And so he was brought up basically feeling like an outsider. And as a result, instead of following the rules, learned to do things his own way as a way to fit in. So his whole life has been built on following, if you'll pardon the expression, following his instincts and not worrying about what is right and what is wrong, but following his gut in terms of, and it's gotten him where he's wanted to go, and it's made him very successful in everything he's done. And so that's what he brings to the NYPD homicide division, where he partners with Detective Lizzie Needham, played by Bojana Novakovic. And she is someone who is a tried and true New York cop who follows the rules, who does everything the way it's supposed to be done. And she is from a family of cops and lives in a neighborhood of cops. And she's honest and she's got a ton of integrity and she just believes in doing things by the book. And so, you know, these two just have very different ways of approaching the same situations. And hopefully we as an audience can relate to and identify with each one of their ways, because neither way is wrong. It's just they're going to be butting heads because of it. But you know, if we're telling the stories correctly, the crimes will be solved not by Lizzie's way or Dylan's way, but by a little bit of both.
Talk about the actress who plays Lizzie Needham. It sounds like a fairly new talent in television. How did she come your way, and what did you think about her performance?
She, Bojana was pitched to us. I didn't know her or her work at all. And, you know, what they often do is they send you clips of shows and movies they've done. And so, you know, it was a very tricky part. First of all, Alan is so talented that you need to find someone who is going to be able to go toe-to-toe with him, which isn't easy. There aren't a lot of people out there. It's a light, as I said, a light show, so you need to find someone who can do comedy. But it's also got action, so you need to find someone who can do action and obviously drama. And so I watched some of Boyana's clips and was incredibly impressed by her in terms of everything she could do. And there was one particular arc she had on a show called Shameless that just totally blew me away. And so we met her, and it was me and Mark Webb, who directed the pilot, and Heather and Aaron and Bill and Leopoldo, and we all were just really taken by her. And she showed up, and, you know, she is born in Serbia, raised in Australia, and so, you know, very, very different from my background, which is born in New York and raised in New York. I wasn't sure if she'd get the rhythm of my writing, and in a way she was the great surprise to me of this show, because every day she just surprised me with her talent and her ability to do things and the choices she made that were always different and unexpected and yet always seemed to make the writing better.
Mm-hmm.
And she and Alan together are I'm sorry to interrupt you, Simon, but she and Alan together are so much fun, and their chemistry, which is everything in a show like this, is so special. So, you know, I feel so grateful that didn't just work out, but it worked out so well.
Did the chemistry come up out of the bat, or did something that both actors had to work at?
You know, it's funny. We do – one of the things you have to do with a pilot before you shoot is you do a table read, which is when all the actors and the producers sit around a table and read the script out loud. But for pilots, you do it for the executives of the network and the studio. So this is the first time that the actors really have met each other. It's the first time they've ever read any of this in front of me out loud, let alone in front of the head of the network, the head of the studio, all these people. So it's an incredibly high-pressure and artificial situation. And so that was really the first time that they worked together. And those things never go well, and I got a little terrified. And then the next day, Alan Boyana, Mark Webb, the director, and I went to Mark's house, and we rehearsed for, like, you know, 4 or 5 hours and just went over all the scenes. And about 15 minutes into it, Alan Boyana just found something. And everything is as if a light turned on. They just clicked. And the second that happened, you know, Mark and I just looked at each other, and we knew that there was something magical between them. And it hasn't dimmed yet.
Mm-hmm. I saw the second season premiere of Jessica Jones last night, the Paley Center for Media, and a lot of the conversation with Kristen Ritter, the star, was Armstrong, the producer of the show, and many of the other people, Ms. Rosenberg, excuse me, and many of the people involved with the show, dealt with how you portray or how New York City is portrayed in the kind of tone that the show is. In the case of Jessica Jones, it's a very dark, noir tone. So there was a lot of talk about how the director of photography and the set designer and the way you shoot the program all deals with bringing that tone. In your case, you wanted this light tone. You did not want it to be noir or very dark. How did you use New York City producing the show here to accomplish that tone?
You know, this is the third show I've done in New York, and again, having lived here all my life, I love this city so much, and I feel like it is such an additive to anything that's shot here because of the energy and because of all of the character the city has. But you raise an excellent point, which is there are 100 different looks and 100 different feels of New York, and so the tone and look and feel of a show is going to try to embrace and capture, you know, a different angle of the city. And for us, very unlike Jessica Jones, it's a lighter show. So, you know, what I wanted to present was an elevated New York. Now, that doesn't mean we're only going to see the kind of Sex and the City New York of, you know, the beautiful brownstones and the giant penthouses overlooking Central Park. We shoot in all the boroughs and we shoot in all the neighborhoods. But at the same time, I don't want to show, you know, the garbage, and if there are rats, the rats. And, you know, that to me is now part of a little bit of the fantasy of what this show is. So it's really trying to both embrace you know, New York as a character in the show, and at the same time be able to use New York as a means to help set the tone for the show. We've got an amazing location director in Mike Fucci who helps us with that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. By the way, who is your director of photography on the show, and also who does your music?
Director of photography is a MVP on the show, a guy named Joe Collins, who is spectacularly talented, an amazing guy, and has a great team. In fact, our whole crew is just amazing. But Joe and Ray Kluga does the production design, and they really help make the show look as beautiful as it looks.
Mm-hmm. And what about music?
Oh, music is Jimmy Levine. He is our composer. He does the score, and Mark Wilk is our music supervisor. And they're both overseen by Antonia Ellis, who runs Post and is a producer on the show.
The part we're talking about is Instinct. It is the new drama on CBS starring Alan Cummings of The Good Wife and Cabaret fame and other things too. And a very good cast as well, produced in New York. And the show will premiere a week from Sunday after 16 minutes, 8 p.m. Eastern and Pacific time. Michael Rouse is the executive producer. He joins us live here in the Big Apple this half hour on Tomorrow Be Televised. Simon Applebaum with you live from New York. And if you have a question or comment for Michael, don't be shy. Ring it in, 646-652-2906. Or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Next Friday on Tomorrow Be Televised, among our guests, we'll have two graduates of the New York Television Festival who made it very big on the CW. A couple years ago, we had them with a show called Significant Mother, which graduated from CW's digital service, DWC, for a short summer run on the Prime Network. Now they have one of the critically acclaimed shows of this year that premiered a few days ago. It's called Life Sentence. And they will be with us, Eric Cardillo and Richard Keith, next Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, here on Tomorrow Be Televised, which you can find on Blog Talk Radio and the Air Radio Podcast Network. Michael, what other shows have you worked on in New York, and what do you think about the New York production scene, particularly now?
The last show I did here was a show called Royal Pains on USA Network that we had the good fortune of doing 8 seasons of. And we shot that on our stages in Long Island City, which is in Queens, and also out in Long Island and in Manhattan. And before that, I did a show for CBS called Love Monkey with Tom Cavanaugh, and we shot that all over the old East Village, which had a lot more character than the new East Village has. That's my New York shooting experience here.
I remember Royal Pains. That was we had the creator on the show sometime back. Marvelous program, great long run. I think was a major boost in terms of getting more production here in New York.
Yeah, it was. We that show lasted so long that we saw New York go from being, you know, relatively at the beginning of embracing TV to now it being so crowded that it's hard to find crew members sometimes, and it's hard to find stage space to build your sets. I mean, it's great for all of us in New York, and at the same time, you can't build new stages fast enough because there are so many shows shooting here. So it's fantastic for the city and fantastic for all of us who work in New York.
The hunt for a serial killer that starts things off, is that the overriding arc of the series season, or do you have a situation where Cummings' character solves a case every week, but there's still this overriding arc that that powers everything?
It is that story is put to bed after the first episode. So each episode is going to be a different crime story. And, you know, if we are lucky enough to get a second season, we are going to introduce a character who we mention in the first season, who in a way is someone that used to be in Dylan, that's Alan's character's life, who resurfaces, and someone who is equally as brilliant, but in a little bit more of a nefarious way. And so we're very excited to hopefully have the opportunity to get into that.
Before we go, talk about who you brought on to write and direct this series, and what kind of input, whether it's experiences in New York, experiences being gay, experiences on the NYPD, what kind of things did they bring into the making of the show?
Well, we have a great and very diverse writing staff, and that's always kind of the heart of every show. And we have Carol Flint and Connie Burge, who both worked on the entire run of Royal Pains. We have Christopher Ambrose and Jill Abinanti and Dan Fessman and Tanya Barfield and Lee Ellenberg and the brothers, Thomas Aguilar and Michael Balin, who also, they're all part of the writer's room with me, and a really, really talented team of writers. And directors are probably too many to go through, but we had a directing producer named Doug Arankowski. And yes, we absolutely, and I firmly believe in trying to get different life experiences and different points of view, both behind the camera and in the writer's room, so that, you know, we're able to represent in an authentic way all the different, you know, voices that are in the world, and especially in New York. And it's part of what this show is about, you know, which is that in terms of embracing the fact that there's a gay male lead. And trying to mix it up. And so our mayor in this of New York City in the show is an American Indian woman, and the basically top cop played by Sharon Leal is also diverse. So, and of course, there's Naveen Andrews, who plays Julian, who's Dylan's old CIA pal. So both in front of the camera and behind the camera, you know, we really believe in having diversity.
Mm-hmm. It's turning out it's not just the golden age of plentiful TV all over the place. It's definitely a golden age of plentiful TV here in New York. And certainly the Mayor's Office of Media Entertainment, I think, deserves a lot of credit. New York Television Festival, Independent Filmmaker Project, a lot of people deserve the credit for the kind of production scene that allows a show like Instinct to happen here in New York.
There's no question. Julie Menon's done a great job, and I was just working with the Made in New York people through the Writers Guild, who, you know, who are really looking for ways to not just support film and TV in New York, but to keep building it and to keep giving opportunities to New Yorkers of all backgrounds, so that New York, not, you know, not just next season, but 10 seasons from now, has its own kind of homegrown group of storytellers, both on TV as show creators and showrunners, but also in feature films, so that the New York production scene will always be bustling. And of course, the tax incentive, you know, makes a giant difference, because New York is such an expensive city. So to be able to be given a tax incentive to shoot here is what enables us to do it. Because otherwise, the studios and networks who pay for the shows, understandably, will say, you know, why shoot in New York when I can shoot in Toronto for 30% less? And when you're talking about 22 episodes of shows that cost millions of dollars, that's a lot of money, and it's very hard to fight for a city if it doesn't make financial sense. So I totally agree. The New York Film Commission, and you know, everything kind of beneath that has done an extraordinary job of making New York a fertile place for production.
The program is Instinct, starring Alan Cumming. It premieres next Sunday night, March 18th, 8 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time, right after 60 Minutes on your local CBS station. Of course, check your local where CBS is available in your area, on a local station near you. And for more details about the program online, CBS.com. Instinct, next Sunday, March 18th, 8 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time. Michael Rouse, the executive producer of Instinct, thank you again for joining us. All the best to you, Alan, your whole team, for making the go. And hopefully next Sunday is the beginning of a long and wonderful run.
Thank you so much, Simon. I really appreciate it.
You're very welcome, Michael. Take care. Enjoy the weekend.
Okay. Thanks, you too. Bye-bye.
Michael Rouse, executive producer of Instinct, joining us live in New York. More tomorrow, we tell eyes ahead, but first some words from the fine folks at Audible.com. We just discussed the fact that this program, Instinct, is from the mind of the great author James Patterson. Well, you have an opportunity today to get another one of Mr. T's wonderful work, through the world of audio. It's called 50/50. It's one of the newest audiobooks available through Audible.com. And all you have to do to get that book for free is go for a trial offer to Audible. And all you got to do for that is go here, audibletrial.com/televised. Audible.com is the leading provider of spoken digital audio entertainment information. There's over 180,000 titles to choose from. You listen to them on any device, including whatever you are hearing us on right now, at Blog Talk Radio or on our radio. Just sign up at audibletrial.com/televised. Get one free audiobook, 1 month trial of the service, and great customer service from the fine folks at Audible. So hear for yourself why Audible.com can transform the way you hear the world, and why they're a proud development partner of the New York Television Festival. Audibletrial.com/televised. When we come back, the answer to this week's Cracker Trivia question and the person that got it right, and what they'll win too. But first, Sleeper Shows of 2017 is back this Monday night on Lifetime. It's called Mary Kills People. Cal Armstrong, the creator and executive producer, joins me from Toronto. After we pause at the bottom of the hour for web identification. You're listening to the best internet radio on the planet, www.blogtalkradio.com. More than 25 million listeners around the world every month and growing. Check out The Sports Offensive with J.D. and Mark tomorrow, 11 a.m. Eastern, 8 a.m. Pacific. Got a sense, we'll talk about the NCAA basketball championships that begin this coming week. That's The Sports Offensive tomorrow, 11 a.m. Eastern, 8 a.m. Pacific, right here on Blog Talk Radio. And remember, that's BTR 24/7, along with everything else, at YouTube.com. Welcome back to the second half of Tomorrow Televised for this Friday afternoon. Simon Applebaum with you live from New York. Got a great guest coming your way in the half hour ahead. Plus our classic trivia question of the week winner. And all you got to do to be involved in the action is give us a call, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. For many TV critics, one of the big, wonderful surprises of this past year was a show out of Canada called Mary Kills People that found its U.S. home on Lifetime. This coming Monday night, the second season of Mary Kills People begins. And joining us live from Toronto, Canada, where the program is produced, the creator executive producer, Tara Armstrong. Hi, Tara.
Hi, Simon.
Thank you very much for joining us. How are things going in getting Mary Kills Season 2 on the air?
They are going great. Yeah, we're really excited to be airing soon in the U.S. We've actually already aired here in Canada, so we're excited to bring the second season of the show to all our U.S. fans.
This is a show that really the public discovered and then the critics discovered, and as I mentioned in the tease, a lot of critics, maybe more than maybe you thought, put it on not only their 10 best list, their top 20 list, either new shows or best shows, period, but they also called it one of the great surprises of the year.
Yeah, and we're so grateful for all the support that we've gotten from the critics. I mean, I think, you know, you never really know how the show is going to be received, but I mean, my theory on this show and how it's been received so well is that, you know, it's about death, and I think that death is something that we all think about and we all don't really talk about necessarily, but that we're all, you know, it's the one thing that really profoundly connects us all. And I think people connected with that on this show. And, you know, we also have an amazing cast led by Caroline Davernes, who is, you know, absolutely outstanding as Mary, our heroine, who is, you know, providing death with dignity for all of her patients. And I think, it's just something that critics and audiences have connected.
Mm-hmm. How long did it take to come up with the series?
Well, I wrote the pilot episode for this probably, close to 4 or 5 years ago. I wrote it while I was a student at university at UBC. I was doing a creative writing degree, and, I really wrote this because I personally have always been sort of preoccupied with death, and I wanted to explore my own feelings about it. And, you know, I know that when I've seen television shows or movies that really talk about death in an authentic way and talk about, you know, that it's a scary thing that we all have to approach one day, I just felt very comforted by that when I would see, you know, stories about it. And so I just, as a young writer, I knew I wanted to write about it. And at the time in Canada, assisted suicide was illegal, and we've since passed a law to make it legal, but under very sort of strident requirements. But at the time when I was having, you know, writing, it was being very debated in the media, and I just, you know, I believed that it should be available for people, and I had this idea about, you know, this doctor, Dr. Mary Harris, who wanted to provide the service for people, and it really, you know, it just was a story I really wanted to tell.
Way back when, Tara, in the 1960s, what is now talked about as assisted suicide or providing death with dignity used to be called mercy killing. And in fact,
yes,
one of the first TV efforts to spotlight that issue was the opening episode of The Defenders, the famous lawyer series with E.G. Marshall and Robert Reed. Jack Klugman was the prosecuting attorney. Philip Abbott played a doctor who assisted in the mercy killing of somebody to ease their pain. They're like in so much, you know, so much intolerable pain that there's like no way out. No, you know, and the person was in a coma besides. And now here we are, you know, in the new millennium, and we can now have a series that deals with that subject in depth, but do it from the standpoint of someone who, it's not just a one-time affair. This person is actually committed to carrying out this idea of death with dignity.
Yeah, and I definitely, I mean, that makes me think of, you know, Jack Kevorkian, who also was, you know, such an intense advocate for this and was a very controversial figure. But, you know, he really pushed the conversation forward. And even, you know, there was that one, I think it was on 60 Minutes, where he actually, you know, showed somebody on TV that he was helping die. It was somebody, I believe, who had ALS, and this person wanted to die. They just didn't have any quality of life anymore. And so he decided to videotape himself doing this and put it on television and basically was challenging the governments and saying, if, you know, if you think this is murder, then come and get me. And of course, you know, he did actually have to go to trial for this and ended up going to jail for 8 years. For our show, like, Mary is much more of a, she's doing this underground and nobody, you know, a lot of this series is her trying to keep this a secret, and is less of a public advocate, for it. But I mean, in my research for the show, I definitely delved into Jack Kevorkian and the way, you know, he approached it. I think Mary, Jack, I always sort of say, like, Jack Kevorkian is like the last person I would want at my bedside if I was dying, and I would definitely want Mary at my bedside because she's a lot, you know, just has better bedside manner, I think.
Do you get a lot of audience reaction in that manner? Like, if I have to go, that's the way I want to go, and that's the person I want to have with me to carry it out?
Sorry, I didn't hear you there. What was the question?
I was saying, do you get a lot of audience feedback, both in Canada and the United States, of that kind of reaction? If I'm going to go at some point, this is the way I want to go. This is the person that, if I decide assisted suicide, someone like Mary, with her ethics, is the person I would like to carry it out.
I mean, I definitely think, you know, I'm not on Twitter, but every now and then I look on Twitter and see what people are saying about the show. And I definitely think people have said that about Mary. And I know in, you know, so many times, like, our producers or other people on the show have said, like, I would want Mary and Des to be the ones to help me to the other side. But yeah, I think that, you know, small way the show has started a conversation or added to the conversation of, you know, the different ways of approaching dying, and that, you know, there's the ability to have more control. I once read somewhere that death is the most uncontrollable stage of life. And I think what Mary does, and I think, you know, what the doctors who are actually providing the service in real life offer is a way of these people who are dealing with terminal illnesses to gain some sort of control over their diagnosis and some sort of control over their life.
Here's some of the reviews that people have had about Mary Kills People, which begins its second season on Lifetime this Monday night at 9 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time. Here's what Variety had to say. Mary Kills People is an energetic, savvy program that combines elements of crime thrillers, medical soaps, and propulsive character drama, employing all those recognizable forms to illuminate the complexity of the knotty issues at its core. And Vulture had this. The writers know that oftentimes you need to laugh to make it through the pain, and they give Mary a wry sense of humor to break up all the death and running from the cops. Tyrone Strong is the creator and executive producer of Mary Kills People. She's with us live from Toronto, where the series is produced this half hour exclusively on Tomorrow Be Televised. Simon Appleman with you live from New York. Delighted to have you with us. If you have a question or comment for Tara, make that call, 646-652-2906. or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Coming up later this half hour, the answer to this week's Cracking Trivia question and the person who got it right. And then Monday, we will have the author of a brand new book called Stealing the Show, How Women Are Revolutionizing in Television. It's by former Village Voice TV critic Joy Press, also former Los Angeles Times feature writer. It's a great bestseller on Barnes & Noble and Amazon, and we're offering it as a prize next week for our classic trivia feature. Joy Press from Stealing the Show, next Monday, 3:30 to New Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. So what about the actress who plays Mary? How did you find her? And what kind of guidance did you give her for the role?
So Caroline Deverness was actually someone that our U.S. casting agent suggested, and I was actually not familiar with her, but as soon as the second we saw it, he sent her demo, and the second we saw it, I know for myself, I was like, this is Mary 100%, and all of the other producers involved in the show felt the same way, and we sent her the first two or three scripts. And she read them and connected with the material. And, we're so lucky because I always say that Caroline Deverness is the best thing that ever happened to me because I just think that this show, you know, it really is all about Mary. And, you know, had we not been able to cast someone as talented as her, it might not have been successful. And, you know, in terms of guidance that we gave her, I mean, we really don't need to give her any guidance because she's so phenomenal at her job. And, you know, she really got this character and really brought all the nuance and compassion to this character because we really, you know, we weren't sure how audiences would respond to her. You know, yes, she's doing this altruistic action and risking her own life to help people die with dignity. But at the same time, you know, she's a complicated woman and, you know, it makes decisions that we may not always understand and, you know, puts her family at risk as a result of what she's doing at times. And, but really I think Caroline has just embodied this role in such a way that, you know, it really connects.
Mm-hmm. I mentioned in the first half hour that I had the chance to see the second season premiere of Jessica Jones from Netflix last night at the Paley Center for Media, and they had Kristen Ritter, the star, and Melissa Armstrong, the producer. And Melissa said the first season, it was all about getting into Jessica or the character's head. This year, it was about breaking it out and showing her heart. Did you follow the same approach with from season one to season two?
I wouldn't necessarily say we followed exactly that approach. We really, for season two, we wanted to take everything that we found successful from season one and just sort of double down on that. You know, for me, I really think the heart of the show is the patient stories and Mary and Dez's relationship to the patients. And, you know, we had this one character in season one, Morgan, who had a multiple episode arc. He was one of their patients. And, you know, we really got to know him and know his plight and what he'd been dealing with. And we knew we wanted to do that again for season two and have these patient stories that we also have multiple episode arcs with them and really get to know them. So in season one, we meet a patient in the first episode and we see them all throughout the season and until they finally, you know, die in the last episode of the season. And, you know, we also do have the show, you know, there's the sort of investigative element of this, the threat of exposure of Mary. And that definitely comes back in season two, which is, I think, very exciting. And we also have, you know, like a kind of classic antagonist, because I think, you know, putting Mary against an antagonist, we learn a lot about our protagonist. And in this season, we have our antagonist played by Rachelle Lefevre. So we have these sort of two really strong women that are both kind of rebels, and they're both, you know, sort of pushing against the status quo. And to see the two of them go head to head is really exciting and something that you don't always see. And so that's been really great as well.
One of the unique things about your show, Tara, is the fact that it is mostly written by women, and it's mostly directed by women. Tassie Cameron, who was the person that put together 10 Days in the Valley last fall for ABC with Kira Sedgwick, we had her on the show at the time, is also one of the executive producers, and her production company is involved with this venture. You have a number of people from Flashpoint who either wrote or directed the show. Kelly Mott is a wonderful director, by the way. A terrific talent we should all know more about, who was one of the key directors of Flashpoint. Holly Dale, who's a director also on the show, they're involved. What difference does it make when you have mostly women and mostly women writing and directing a program?
I mean, for me, I've actually been on shows pretty much predominantly that are women, so I can't really speak to how it's different when it's men at the helm, because most of my experiences have been that, which I know is kind of rare. But I mean, you know, we have, especially in season one, where we had Holly Dale directing all 6 episodes, and you know, our writers' room was predominantly female as well. It really was like, you know, a sisterhood, and we were all in it because the show meant so much to us, and you know, there wasn't any ego at the heart of it, and there it was just you know, easy in a way. So it's been really great. I don't know. I can't really speak to how it's different when it's men. But I mean, we've had male writers in the room every season as well, and they've been wonderful. But yeah, I mean, I think that it's good to have a balance in, and you know, just the more diverse we can have our writers' room and, you know, behind like our crew and our cast, the better, I think.
Mm-hmm. You have a number of different players in your program. You have Lifetime. You have Entertainment One, which is the production company behind the show. You've got Cassie's production company. You have Chorus Entertainment. You have Global, the television network that in Canada that is putting on your show. How do you deal as a creator, as a showrunner, as an executive producer with, you know, what everybody wants? How do you have everybody on the same wavelength so that it's not about pleasing everybody, but it's about at least everybody finding common ground in what you want to do and in your vision of the show?
I mean, again, you know, it has been pretty easy on this show, because I think, you know, I wrote the pilot, and I think it was pretty clear, like, what the show was going to be like and what the tone of the show was going to be from that pilot. So everybody that signed on and came on board, you know, was on board with that pilot and on board with what the show was. Of course, we have, you know, as we continue to break the story and, you know, there's the notes process with the networks, but I will say that, you know, Lifetime and Global are almost always in alignment. And, you know, if there's times when we, as the creators are, you know, really feel strongly that something should be a certain way, the broadcasters respect that and will trust us to see it through. So, you know, it has been pretty good.
Instead, if you want to see a marathon of the first season episodes of Mary Kills People, you can go on Sunday to Lifetime Movies, the sister network of Lifetime. They're going to be doing all the episodes of the first season back to back to back to back this Sunday, that is March 11th. And, of course, the following night, 9:30 Pacific time, that's March 12th, the opening of season 2 of Mary Kills People. Tara Armstrong is the creator and executive producer. She's live with us from Toronto, Canada, where the show is produced this half hour on Tomorrow We Televise. I'm Applebaum, down south of her in New Haven, York, where it's 40 degrees at the top of the hour. If you have a question or comment for Tara, got a few more minutes with her, so get on the horn, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Coming up on the program a week from today, Aaron Cordillo and Richard Keith, the executive producers of the new acclaimed CW series that premiered early this week, Life Sense, the graduate of the New York Television Festival, and their second series for the CW over the last few years. First one, which we covered, was Significant Mother several years ago. Eric Cordillo and Richard Keith from the new CW hit series, Life Sentence, that's next Friday, 3:30 Eastern Pacific, right here on Tomorrow We Televise. How does the character of Mary grow in this second season? What are some of the issues or dilemmas she faces in the course of dealing with death with dignity?
I mean, this season we did want to explore the sort of more controversial guests. You know, the season starts with an episode where we have a patient story that's actually a couple, one of whom is terminal and one is not, and that they want to die together. And, you know, exploring the sort of grayer areas of these requests that are brought to Mary and Des. And, you know, Mary, I think, is really, you know, in the first episode, we talk about pushing boundaries and crossing lines. Des is wanting to play it a bit more safe in what they're doing, and Mary, you know, is trying to not play God, essentially, and not decide, you know, if someone wants to die, that they should respect their wishes. But putting all of that on one person is a really difficult thing. And then with Mary, I think, you know, the sort of heart of the story is what she does. She's doing it for compassionate reasons and altruistic reasons, but it is illegal in our world, and that she is sort of driven into this criminal world as a result of what she's doing. And that's definitely represented by the character of Olivia, who is Mary's antagonist this season. And that, you know, in a way, these two characters are a mirror to one another and have more similarities than differences in a lot of ways. And so we do take Mary to sort of a darker place, and definitely that both Des and Mary have to have faced some pretty big moral dilemmas this season. And then, you know, can they ever come back from crossing a line that's more complicated than they crossed before?
Mm-hmm. And I understand that, and can we say it, that there are more situations to come?
Oh, definitely. Definitely more situations to come.
What we're talking about is you already have a third season that's now in pre-production.
Yes, so I've stepped out of the season three development room. We haven't been ordered yet, but we're just developing season three. And... yeah, I mean, there's so many stories to tell with this show, and, you know, just continuing to sort of peel back the layers of Mary and why she does what she does, and just really the toll that this work takes on someone.
Mm-hmm. The program is called Mary Kills People, and it goes into season two here in the United States on Lifetime this coming Monday night, 9 p.m. Pacific time, and Unreal's new season follows at 10 o'clock. Check your local news board. Lifetime is available in your area on cable and satellite. For more details about the promo online, go to mylifetime.com. And once again, if you want to see the first season, catch it this Sunday on sister network Lifetime Movies. It's Lifetime Movies for the first season marathon, and then the second season, Mary Kills People, Monday night, 9 p.m. Pacific time, on your local cable system or satellite system that carries Lifetime Television. And by the way, I'm on Anne before Tower Goes. She was also the creator executive producer for the first season of Private Eyes. That's the series that premiered here in the United States a few weeks ago on Ion Television. That's on Sunday night, I believe, at 8 o'clock. Great series. It got a Paley Center screening last month. It's a wonderful program. If you have not caught it, please do. And Tara, congratulations, by the way, on what you did the first season of the show and how the show is doing right now in the United States.
Thank you so much. I think you said I was an executive producer on the show, but I was actually just a writer on the show on Private Eyes.
Okay, got that straight. But congratulations on your contribution to that. And I'm happy the show is finally getting the airing here in the United States.
Yeah, it's a great show. Jason Priestley and Cindy Sampson are amazing, and it's a really fun show.
Tara Armstrong, creative executive producer of Mary Kills People, thank you very much for making the time to be with us this afternoon. Congratulations on season two, both in Canada and starting Monday night on Lifetime, and hopefully many, many more seasons to come. And a wonderful performance by Carolyn. She is marvelous. Maybe this is the year she'll get an Emmy nomination for it, too.
Well, that would be great. Thank you so much.
You're welcome, Tara. Take care. Enjoy the weekend.
Thanks, you too. Bye.
Tara Strong, theater executive producer of Very Cool People, joining us live from Toronto, Canada, where the series is produced. And finally, time to let you know that we have a winner for our classic trivia question this week, and that winner is Meg O'Malley from Brooklyn, New York. She got the correct answer, so she is going to win TV Writing on Demand by Neil Landau and Hot Pants in Hollywood, the new book by the former Mary Tyler Moore Show writer Susan Silver. Both Neil and Susan were on this program a week ago, and we've gotten a lot of great response to those interviews, so thank you very much for that. Over 200 replays so far and counting. The question we posed on Monday was this: what was Mary Tyler Moore's job in her character on The Mary Tyler Moore Show? The answer, associate producer on the 6 o'clock news. If you just said associate producer, we would have taken that too. But Megan did the whole thing, so she is our prize winner of TV Writing on Demand and Hot Pants in Hollywood. And Megan, congratulations. Those prizes are on its way to you. Thank you so much for playing. Megan O'Malley from Brooklyn, New York. Well, another classic trivia question for you on Monday's show, and whoever gets it right off the bat, we'll get Stealing the Show, the brand new book by Joy Press, How Women Are Revolutionizing Television, and drove you on our show Monday afternoon, 3 p.m. Eastern New Pacific, right here on Tomorrow We Televise. If you know the answer, we pose the question on Monday, email me, SimonApple04@yahoo.com. It's SimonApple04@yahoo.com. So remember, play to win, and if you win, all you have to do is be in. If you missed the question on Monday, don't worry. I'll post it on Tuesday on Facebook and on Twitter at UBC Simon TWBT. But once again, in order to win, be in, and all the very best. Tune in Monday for our next classic trivia question of the week. Thanks to all of our guests for being here today and all of you for listening. Don't forget, coming up again on Monday, Steal the Show author Joy Press. If you came in late on today's program, want to catch up on episodes you missed, go to the homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. www.blogtalkradio.com/televised. And don't forget, throughout the weekend, you can check us out on our podcast, and that's available through iTunes.com, also on Apple TV's iTunes podcast app, and, of course, on the iHeartRadio podcast network 24/7. Just go to iHeartRadio.com, put Tomorrow We Televise in the search bar, click, and you're in. And don't forget, we want to hear from you. What's your thoughts on where TV is at and where it's going? We want to hear, so email me, SimonApple04@yahoo.com. You can find me on Facebook and follow me on Twitter at UBCSimonTWBT. However you communicate, it's appreciated because what you say matters. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants, not for those of Blog Talk Radio or iHeartRadio. Our production associate at BTR is Candace Williams. ATO's Blog Talk Radio General Manager with Jay Sonberg, Executive Content Producer. The co-founders of this enterprise are Al Levy and Bob Cherish. Tomorrow Televised is brought to you today by Audible.com, an Amazon company and proud development partner of the New York Television Festival. Audible will transform the way you hear the world. For a free audio book and 1 month trial, audibletrial.com/televised. For Tomorrow Televised, I'm Simon Applebaum in New York. Thank you for your listening. Have a wonderful weekend. If you're in an area where you've had the oasis the last week or so, hang in there. It will get better as the weekend goes on. That snow is melting, and hopefully the power, for those of you affected by the power line outages, hopefully it will be restored sooner rather than later. And if you are affected, if you know people are affected, please check in on them this weekend to make sure that they are okay and getting better all the time. We'll be back with you on Monday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, you know where, Blog Talk Radio and the iHeartRadio Podcast Network. Whatever you're up to this weekend, please make it a great and safe one. Good luck to all the teams competing in the NCAA Men's Women's Basketball Championship. Don't forget, the selection show is this Sunday on TBS. That's right, TBS. And the women's selection show will be later Sunday night on ESPN. Until next time, stay well and stay tuned.